You may think that you have it bad, but I want you to consider this. In order for me to wear this, I've got to deal with hearing aids. I've got to deal with a mic stand right up in here. So if you're griping about one little mask, get over it. Some of us have to deal with a whole lot of other things just to get ready to face the day. But I can hear. That's good. At night, I can pull both of them out, lay down on either side. I'm not responsible for anything Marcy tells me to do during the next day. So it all works out in the wash. We've been thinking over these days about when we're going to get to throw these away and when we're going to get back to, I don't know if you call it a normal. I've grown weary of that word because people have overused it, especially when they say new normal. I don't know what that really means. So we've been talking not about a new normal or not about just getting back to some type of normalcy, but we've been talking about the next step, the next phase, the next normal. In other words, folks, we don't know when things are going to level out, whatever that means to you. No one knows. We've said it before, we'll say it again, that none of us, or very few of us, have been alive during a all-out pandemic. The ones that did live during that time are extremely old in age, and they probably were just little babies when the last pandemic hit our part of the world. So a lot of the decisions we make, just taking the advice, taking science, taking faith into consideration to try to come up with next steps. But even at that, what can we do to prepare ourselves for the coming days? We're calling it the next normal, growing in and through times that are tough. We started last week, and we're doing this just for 4 Sundays because this is November 1, but in just a few weeks, we're going to begin the Christmas season. So in this little parenthesis we had, these several weeks we had to deal with this idea of a next normal, we've been looking at some situations, some stories, some people, men and women in Scripture, that had to adapt, that had to get used to things being different. And how did they do that? How did God lead them through that time? We looked last week at the life of Joseph. Joseph spanning what? From chapter 37 to chapter 50 of the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. I mean, we're talking about the man's whole life almost, from when he was a teenager all the way up until he was second in command in Pharaoh's army, Pharaoh's government. But you don't have to just span a person's lifetime to figure things out. What we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at one brief conversation that Jesus had with a woman who's unnamed. All we know her by is the Samaritan woman. Her story is found in John chapter 4, and that's been our readings this week. But what I want to do is just talk you through a conversation that Jesus had with this unnamed woman of Samaria, and through that one brief conversation, how it changed her life, how it changes, can change our lives for the better as well. Well, it begins with realizing that when we talk about this lady, we talk about her being a Samaritan woman. Just that, those two words, Samaritan woman, paint a pretty vivid picture for us. If we set the stage for John chapter 4, Jesus is traveling with his disciples, and they are trying to get from Judea to Galilee. Now, you got to remember that back in this day and time, Israel was broken up into 3 major areas. You had the very northern part that was called Galilee, and that's where Jesus spent a lot of his time, especially the first 18 months of his ministry. Then you have to the south, you have Judea. That's where Jerusalem is located. But in between Judea to the south and Galilee to the north, you have Samaria. And Samaria is this landmass that's just right in between. But the problem is, because of where Samaria was and because of past history, racism is alive and well on this day when Jesus has this conversation with this unnamed Samaritan woman. If you remember, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but Israel was basically decimated in 722 BC by the Assyrian army. There were 12 tribes in Israel at the time, and 10 of those tribes were basically just obliterated from the face of the earth. They were destroyed. We never hear of those 10 tribes again. But as time went on, Jews were then exiled by the Babylonian Empire in 586 BC, and that's when Jerusalem fell. And so all the Jews were scattered, and then when they were allowed to come home, the great Persian ruler named Cyrus the Great, in about 540-something BC, allowed the Jews to come home. Well, when they did come home, they found that area known as Samaria to be overrun with half-breeds, is what they called the people. People that couldn't prove their genealogy as to being one of those 10 lost tribes. And from that, the Samaritan race of people group came into being. And there was always animosity, hatred, bigotry, racism between pure Jews and these people that could not prove their genealogy, who became known as Samaritans. It got so bad that the Samaritans set up a temple on a mountain called Gerizim near Samaria, their capital city, as a rival temple for the temple that Solomon built that was in Jerusalem. That's how bad it got. We serve the God in Mount Gerizim. We serve the one true living God who lives and is inhabiting the temple of Jerusalem. That's the state of affairs on this day when Jesus is making a trip from Judea. He's heading up to Galilee and he's got to make a choice. Is he going to take the shortcut that would take only 3 days and just walk straight up from south to north and go through Samaria? That would be an interesting choice because it could lead to trouble. It could lead to racial overtones if they ran into anybody. It could end up just being an all-out brawl because Samaritans and Jews simply had nothing to do with one another. Jesus normally should have done what everybody else did. You cut down toward the eastern part of the border of Israel, then you cut up, then you cut back west, and you avoid Samaria altogether. Jesus didn't do that. He didn't do it for a reason. He didn't do it because there was an opportunity to have a chat with a woman of Samaria in a day and an age when racism was alive and well. Well, Jesus did move up, probably the first, second day as he was moving up from Judea through Samaria to Galilee. He stopped at a place that you can still visit today. If you ever have the opportunity to go to Israel, take the chance. Someday the coast will be clear. I think every believer needs to spend a week or so in the Holy Land, just putting eyes on the stories that you're familiar with. Well, of all the places in that part of the world where we say such and such could have happened around here, that's about all we can do. We don't know the exact spot where Jesus turned water into wine. We don't really know the exact spot where the cross, crucifixion happened. We know the general area. But Jacob's well is a geographical point that has always remained the same. And that's where Jesus stopped. He stopped at Jacob's well. It was a frequent place back in the first century. And like I say, you can still visit that place today. Jesus made his way, dismissed the disciples, asked them to go into town to try to buy something to eat, if they were going to be lucky enough to find a Samaritan who would deal with them. And so you find right around noon this particular day, Jesus sitting at the edge of Jacob's well all by himself until the Samaritan woman comes onto the scene. She's by herself. She's by herself for good reason. She's by herself because she's a woman, first of all. And so when she makes her way to Jacob's well to draw water, She sees Jesus. He's dressed like a Jew. He looks like a Jew because he is a Jew. And all of a sudden, the wall is up. The friction is there. The tension is palpable. It's there. It's written on her face. And all the words she's about to say. She started by saying nothing. But then as she approached the well itself to let down the bucket, whatever the receptacle was where she would draw water, you remember Jesus said, "Give me a drink." She was taken aback. She said, "Excuse me? Men don't talk to women in our culture, but a Jew talking to a Samaritan woman is beyond bad manners. Why are you asking of me for water?" Jesus responded, you remember, and said something like this: "If you knew the water that I know of, if you asked me for a drink of water, I would give you living water." Jesus begins to do what he always does with people like you and me. He begins to tell these little stories. They're called parables. Some of them are long. This one's very brief. This is just a statement that Jesus makes. The lady scoffs at him, laughs at him, and said, "Sir, this is ridiculous. You don't even have a bucket. You have nothing to draw water with. Where are you going to get this living water?" And I remember growing up, when I heard this story, when I read it for myself, even until recent years, I always just assumed living water was just this symbol of the life that Jesus would give us, and that's part of it. But living water literally was running water. Totally different from what you would draw in a well that may be 100 feet deep, where the water collects, where the water gets murky, where the water may be more stagnant than it is anything else. But what you really wanted was you wanted to find a source of water that provided movement, a stream of water. That's what living communicated to the people in the first century. And so then she's really on edge. "Sir, it's not only you, a Jew, a man, talking to me, a woman of Samaria. We have nothing to do with one another. As you've come here, don't know why you're here. You're all by yourself. You have nothing to draw water with. And now you're telling me that you can offer me not only water, but you can offer me running water." He said, "I'll do one better than that. If you knew who was offering you this living water, you would know that he could give you water that would bubble up in your life. Water that would rejuvenate. You not only would never thirst again, but it would be a source of eternal joy." Well, she takes him up on it. Not upon the offer of that water right then. But she begins to ask more questions. She's not put off. And she said, "Well, sir, where can I get this water?" What did Jesus answer her? He said, "Go and get your husband and bring him here." The shortest sentence of her entire conversation with Jesus is this one. She said, "Sir, I have no husband." Period. You remember reading the passage. He answers, and he's not trying to be smart with her. He's not trying to embarrass her. He says, "You said it well, because you've had five husbands, and the one that you're with now is not your legal husband." What's going on here? Is Jesus being rude? Is Jesus being ugly? No, Jesus is trying to get to the heart of the matter. Now, we don't know anything else about what Jesus said, except she acknowledged that he was right. She wondered, I guess, what was happening here. She wondered how he would know such things. We don't know if she was married to all those men. We don't know if some of them died and she remarried. All we know is that now it's beginning to make sense why she comes at the time of day to draw water from Jacob's well, is she wants to make sure she doesn't see anybody there, because no one goes to that well to draw water at the height of the sun in the sky at noontime. They come early in the morning. The other ladies come late in the afternoon. That way she doesn't have to face anyone who knows what her past has been like. So what does she do? She does what we all do. She deflects the conversation. Conversation deflectors, they're all over the place. And what's the most popular way to deflect a conversation that drives home a point, that unmasks your guilt, that lays bare your private life? Well, it's to talk about religion. It's always to talk about church. And so that's what she does. Sir, I perceive that you're a prophet. And answer me this question. You're a Jew. You say we worship in Jerusalem. I'm a Samaritan. We worship at Mount Gerizim here in our part of the world. Which one's right? Who's right? Can't help but think that Jesus smiled when he answered her. And he said, there'll be a day, my friend, when we will not worship God on this mountain or that mountain, but we will worship him in spirit and in truth. Conversation deflectors. You ever used them? I've talked with people before that when really it got to the heart of the matter, while they were coming to ask me for advice or counsel or prayer, which is the greatest thing we can offer to one another, is usually the conversation is deflected towards something about church, something about somebody at church, something going on with the life of faith that has turned them off. Well, I used to go to that church, but I don't like the way they do things. I used to go to that church, but the preacher, he's just boring. I used to go to that church, or I tried this one, but the music wasn't to my liking. That's what she constantly does, deflect, deflect, deflect. Take it off the issue at hand. Jesus listens to her. Jesus takes that sore spot in her life. He doesn't use it to make her feel worse about herself. No doubt, she had been the talk of the town forever. To even understand why she still lived in that area is hard to understand, except she didn't have many options. That's when Jesus says, if you really knew who was saying these things to you, you would understand. Then she said this. She said, sir, I don't know who you are. I don't know your name. I don't know how you know me, because I've never laid eyes on you before. I don't know how you know my past. You've brought it up. It is what it is. And I can't argue with the finer points of which temple is the best or where we're going to really find meaning in this thing called life. But I will tell you this. I do believe that someday God is going to send his messenger, his Messiah, his Christ. And that one is going to tell us all things. You remember what Jesus said? He looked at her and he said, I am he, the one to whom you're speaking. I am that one. Something happened in that woman's life right then. In English translations of the Bible, we say the Samaritan woman believed in Jesus. And that's what she did. And that's an accurate word in English. But you know, we talked about it before. Believing in English is not correct in the New Testament language of Greek. It's the word faith, and it's the verb faith that we can't allow in the English language. So she faithed Jesus is what it literally says. And the difference between believing and faithing is a wide gap of understanding. It's two different choices almost. Believing is just assenting to a certain set of facts. Faithing is saying, not only do I understand and believe and accept, but I follow you, Jesus. I will go where you want me to go. I will say what you want me to say. I will not just give lip service to the life you want me to lead. I'm not going to just wander aimlessly through life pretending that my church is better than your church or whatever the case may be. I believe, I faith you, Jesus. And if that moment she becomes a channel of blessing for others, Because the passage tells us that she immediately went back to the village. And anyone who would listen to her, I mean, she never appeared anywhere in public. She never uttered a word. She was too embarrassed. She had too sordid a past for anyone to give attention to her. But it's as though she went to the town square. Maybe she went to the door of the synagogue there in Samaria. And she said, "Listen to me, my friends. I know you don't understand. I know that you don't accept me. I know that I hold no authority over any of you, but I want to tell you something. I just had a talk with someone, and he told me everything I've ever done. Cannot this be God's Messiah?" John 4:39. "From that city, many of the Samaritans believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified. He told me all the things that I have done." So when the Samaritans came to Jesus, they were asking him to stay with them. And he stayed 2 days. Many more believed because of his word. And they were saying to the woman, "It's no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world." You see what's happening here? This is just one. What? How long could this conversation have lasted? 30 minutes? But it turned a woman's life around. And she became a channel of blessing for others. And they heard and listened and invited Jesus to stay. To stay in Samaria for 2 seconds was too much for a good Jew. To rub shoulders, to bump elbows, to do whatever with a Samaritan was just the absolute worst that you could ever do as far as making yourself unclean. And here Jesus stayed 2 days. And the woman who became a channel of blessing for others saw many people believe. There's that word, same word. Put faithing in Jesus. And then, rightly so, they're not being ugly here. They're not saying, "We're believing just because you believed," or "We don't take your word for it." But they're saying, "Ma'am, you took us and you brought us to Jesus and we heard. And because we heard from him, we also, like you, faith in Jesus." That's amazing to me. Unbelievable. Because see, it hits on the real choice before each one of us, that it's a personal choice. You can't depend upon mom or dad. You can't depend upon husband or wife. You can't depend upon children, as near and precious as they are to us. But the choice to believe, to faith in Jesus, is one we each make ourselves. So how do we weather this pandemic moving forward? We're in the midst of it. Some say Tuesday it's going to be over. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But let's just pretend that maybe there's a little more trouble out there on the horizon. That it's not going to all just wrap itself up because of one event on the calendar or the next. What are we to do right now? Well, I think it's obvious. We have to revoke and eradicate racism in our society. I mean, the Samaritans and the Jews, people in that part of the world still today, hatred, bitterness, it has to end. And it can begin with you and me, maybe taking a lesson out of all the things that have happened and been stirred up because of this pandemic, things that have been brought to the surface that may have always been there, or maybe things we just now caught hold of that make it things worse or better. But when it comes to racism, it's got to stop. What else can we do? Well, I put it this way: own it, don't postpone it. Own what? Own your own sin, I guess would be the best way to put it. Own your own part and responsibility. I don't care who you are or what the issue may be. If you have found yourself failing someone, if you have been the one to drop the ball, if you're the one that is always, what, taking the conversation and deflecting it toward others, making it be about someone else's fault and never your own. That's what this woman started out doing. But then she realized then she realized she had to own it. And she did. And it changed her life. Now, I'm not saying it can happen just like that, but it can happen. You can take responsibility for your choices or lack of good choices. You can own it. And I think the Word of God's message to us here today is own it. Don't postpone it. Don't wait any longer. And then make your life a channel of blessing. Take what God has done for you and use it to bless someone else.
Cause me to come to thy river, O Lord. Cause me to drink at thy river, O Lord. Cause me to live at thy river, O Lord. Cause me to come. Cause me to drink. Cause me to live. The first time I saw him, he moved me. His eyes looked right through me into my heart. His countenance shone like the morning sun, and he told me all that I'd ever done. He said, drink, drink, oh drink from this water, and you'll never thirst. For if you only knew what this water could do, you'd come and drink from it too. He spoke of heaven, a new start. He spoke of heaven, a new heart. Before he was through, somehow I knew he spoke the words of truth. For he said, all of water will never satisfy. I am a well, never will run dry. He said, drink, drink, oh drink from this water, you'll never thirst again. For if you only knew what this water could do, you'd come and drink from it too. Cause me to come to thy river, O Lord. Cause me to drink at thy river, O Lord. Cause me to live at thy river, O Lord. Cause me to come. Cause me to drink. cause me to live.
You see, it's time for us to take one brief conversation and make it a life changer. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for the opportunity to gather here, to show up, to be able to sit, even though physically distanced, masks on, we are here in your presence. And you can reach through 6 feet of space or more or less. You can break through the barrier of a mask, just like you break through the sadness of our lives and promise us living water. Bring it, Lord, and may it happen now. Amen. We wrap up this hour like we always do with an opportunity to respond. That time of response in days of pandemic is a little different than it's been in the past. But it still is an opportunity for you where you are as you pray through what the experience of this hour has been for you or what's happened in your life in these past days. Make the choice. Is it to believe, to faith in Jesus just like an Samaritan woman did long ago? Because you know God knows everything about us. He knows everything we've ever done. So why not just own it? Don't postpone it. And find the water of life that Jesus has for you and me. It's a choice. It's a prayer. I ask you to make it today. Maybe God's leading you to participate in the life of our church, to become a member, officially a part of our congregation. How do you do that? It's a choice. It's a simple thing. But don't let the simplicity of it diminish what its importance is. It's an opportunity for you to plug in, to find a place to serve, and to do just that. And for many of us, as we move through these final songs, this final time, ask God to speak to you. And when He answers, make a commitment to obey today.